Greetings, fam. This episode of Muthonomics brought to you by, I don't know, LeVar Burton and his cool visor from Star Trek The Next Generation, perhaps. I Googled that guy recently, and, you know, it's funny how these, like, I kind of want to say social icons, people who had, like a one-hit wonder, or maybe not a one-hit wonder, because that show ran, I think, for 7 seasons, and he was the star of Reading Rainbow. But it's funny when you Google people who you know. I'm pouring coffee, by the way. I'm not in the El Baño. People that you know for a particular show, it's interesting, like a particular role. When you see them outside of that role, it's just kind of interesting. Whereas when you have actors who play various roles, you know, it's not as shocking when you see them out in the wild, in the real world, so to speak. So anyway, I Googled LeVar Burton the other day when Patrick Stewart was trending on Twitter because CBS signed him to a remake of Star Trek for their CBS All Access channel, I think. So they're going to do like Patrick Stewart, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, post-retirement. I think it's like 20 years in the future after he retired from the Starfleet. Anyway, so I Googled some of the characters and Riker and Geordi LaForge and all those people. And it's weird seeing people age when you knew them as a single character. Whereas it's not so weird to see people age who've played a lot of characters. Like, it's not that weird to see Jean-Luc Picard age because we know him as Professor X. And he's just been in the public eye more. And he looks, you know, very similar. He's still bald, and he's always looked old and bald to me. But Geordi LaForge had, you know, youthful vigor with those cool visor glasses that gave him, like, X-ray man vision. Anyway, he's aged, which is expected, and it looked like he was doing quite well. So I got so many things to talk about, but I'm trying to focus this. I've got the next episode lists written down to keep us on track. Previous episode 15 talked about, introduced the bad idea genes concept. And the first bad idea gene that we looked at was evidence-free argumentation. And today I want to move on to what I said at the close of last episode, which is evidence-ignoring argumentation. And a very recent example of this was Jim Carrey, the Canadian actor, going on Bill Maher's show and saying that we need to embrace socialism. Now, you could take that statement in and of itself, and as I've said, I think I've said previous episodes, you know, let's, just like we did and went through the examples of male tennis players who behaved poorly on the court and were given code violations and point penalties and game penalties and disqualifications. As we looked at that evidence, when someone makes the claim, like Jim Carrey did, that we just need to embrace socialism and not be ashamed of it any longer, we have 100 years worth of evidence to look at. And we could start with Russia, we could start with communist Romania, we could start with East Germany, we could look at Cuba, we could look at Venezuela today. There's lots of examples of socialism that we could look at that the evidence would show resulted in the deaths of millions and millions of people. Mao's China could be tossed in there as well. In fact, a recent study I read said that estimates are that communism/socialism under the collectivist banner of the state is all powerful and group identity is paramount. However, whatever you want to label that, communism, socialism, I'll let all of you intellectual parsers who love nuance and such waste your time. Oh no, that's socialism. Oh no, that's communism. We'll just put it under the banner of collectivism. And collectivism is the state is all powerful and group identity is paramount. So if we, under that banner, it's estimated that At least 100 million people died in the 20th century as a result of that ideology. So, sadly, 100 million innocent souls being murdered is not, apparently it's not enough evidence for the likes of Jim Carrey to maybe move off the socialism position, maybe to come to the conclusion that socialism is not all that it's cracked up to be. And this is when we get into the evidence ignoring. So it's one thing to just throw out an evidence-free argumentation. It's quite another thing to dig your heels in and move forward with an evidence-ignoring argument. And that's what Jim Carrey did recently on the Bill Maher program. He specifically was referencing Venezuela. And it's interesting to me because we're going to follow this train of thought here. For the last, I don't know, up until maybe 2013, 2015, I think was the last time that Sean Penn really made a push backing Venezuela, backing Hugo Chavez, and the whole concept of Venezuelan democratic socialism. But between 2000 and 2010, 2013, somewhere in there, you had several Hollywood liberal elites praising Hugo Chavez and democratic socialism. You had Sean Penn making statements about how wonderful Hugo Chavez was, how wonderful it was that he was putting the wealth back to the people through giving them the oil money. You have Michael Moore making statements, and I mean, Michael Moore, can he even be taken seriously? But we'll look at what he said. Hugo Chavez, he tweeted in 2013, declared the oil belonged to the people. He used the oil money to eliminate 75% of extreme poverty, provide free health and education for all. You have Jesse Jackson, the American supposed civil rights activist, who visited Caracas in 2005 to apologize to Chavez for remarks that evangelist Pat Robertson had made in which he called for Chavez's assassination. Pat Robertson, what are you doing? I would visit to make an apology for that as well. Well, leave it up to evangelicals to mar the image, not only of Christ, but also of America. Way to go. Not a shocker there by any means. but this is what Jesse Jackson said. Hugo fed the hungry. He lifted the poor. He raised their hopes. He helped them realize their dreams. And so today we do mourn because we've lost a lot, but we have a lot left, a stable government and an orderly transition. You have Oliver Stone, the very liberal director, praising him. You've had, who was there was a supermodel who, Naomi Campbell. With this, so if you've been around any level of math, any level of statistics, you're probably familiar with the term a sample size. And a sample size, it has to be deemed significant in order to have the results be considered somewhat legitimate. So if you said 67% of Americans voted for XYZ policy, and then you look at the fine print and you find out that the survey interviewed three people, and two of them said they voted for or supported that policy and one did not, that's not the results are null and void. That's not a big enough sample size. So apparently Naomi Campbell has been spending too much time preening for the camera lens and not enough time actually enriching her brain, perhaps, on the front of statistics and math, because this was her quote. I've been here. I've been here for 24 hours. And I'm amazed to see the love and encouragement for the social programs that you have here for women and children in Venezuela. A 24-hour sample size. That's hilarious. That is so funny. Danny Glover, which we might get into later, he's been a huge proponent of Venezuela and Chavez. And just in case you're wondering why that might be the case, I'm guessing that maybe just there might be a minuscule chance that the reason Danny Glover loved Hugo Chavez was because the Venezuelan government gave Danny Glover's production company 18 million cold hard cash American dollars to direct a film about the Haitian slave uprising. That was in 2006, and guess what type of reviews the movie received? Just take a wild stab. I'll give you a couple seconds. 15% Rotten Tomatoes, 80% Rotten Tomatoes, 90, 95? How about none, nothing? Because since 2006, who knows what's happened to that 18 million bucks, but the movie has never been made. And when Danny Glover continues to get pressed about the movie, he continues to shift the conversation, shift the topic, give vague ideological statements about how he sympathizes with the Haitian uprising. And it has inspired him since he was a young man, and he can't wait to get around doing the. All right, well, 2006 to 2018 is 12 years. I wonder, Danny Glover salary. He has earned up to $7 million for his acting. His net worth is 40 million bucks. Well, 18 of that is courtesy Hugo Chavez and the Venezuelan government. That's fantastic. So, my point in bringing these examples up of liberal celebrities supporting Hugo Chavez is because Hugo Chavez in Venezuela has been the democratic socialism that the liberal elites in America have been pointing to for the last 10 or 15 years, saying this is what we need to embody in America. It's been their shining light. They've been saying, don't look to Russia and Mao's China and Romania and the Eastern Bloc of Europe. Don't look to those countries because that's outdated. Look to modern socialism in Venezuela because it is a shining example of what can be done through a lifelong president and his benevolence towards the people. Now, all fine and dandy when, I guess, on some level, they could get away with it. I shouldn't say fine and dandy because when you talk to people who lived in Venezuela or grew up in Venezuela or still have family in Venezuela, they're not so much in line with the celebrity elite's messages. In fact, we are friends with a Venezuelan family here in Central Florida, and they have been incredibly hesitant to go back to visit family because of the economic crisis going on there. It's dangerous. The crime is through the roof. People are starving. Ozzie Guillen, the Venezuelan baseball player, he blasted Sean Penn publicly on Twitter a few years ago, saying, yo, actually, I should read his tweets verbatim because it didn't start with yo, and it would sound better if I actually read them verbatim. Ozzie Guillen, Sean Penn. Ozzie Guillen on actor Sean Penn. He is a loser. Well, doesn't get much clearer than that. He continued, "Oh God, you are very crazy. Go and move to our country. You will change your mind. Sean Penn defended Chavez is easy when you have money and don't live in our country. Shame on you, Mr. Penn." Sean Penn doubled down on his praise of Chavez and said that the US government and media is conspiring to, quote, defamation. It amounts to defamation, not only to President Chavez, but also to the majority of Venezuelan people, poor people who have elected him president time and time again. Then the actor Sean Penn urges Americans to, quote, call for a moratorium. Don't segue into Iran sanctions. Who are you, Atlantic author? Caitlin Dixon? Dude, figure out a segue. That was brutal. Not even a period. Not even a period. Learn how to write. Go to Grammarly or something. Jeez Louise. Okay, so another pair. That's embarrassingly bad. She's quoting him on Venezuela, and then she segues to a quote about Iran sanctions. That's hilarious. So Guillen continues, who, quote, gave Penn a piece of his mind once again via Twitter, quote, Sean Penn, if you love Venezuela, please move to Venezuela for a year. But rent a house in the Guaranes or Guatire, excuse me for my terrible Spanish pronunciation, to see how long you last, clown. Guillen was not feeling Sean Penn's praise of Venezuela, and Guillen grew up in Venezuela, has family there. So I would tend to believe the experiences and perspectives of someone who grew up in the culture and their critique of it over some dude that grew up in Santa Monica and has probably smoked way too much weed and dropped too much acid and eaten way too many psychedelic mushrooms throughout his life. It's the same reason why I say when you want to talk about Eastern European socialism, find someone from Romania. Find someone from Eastern Germany and talk to them. You are hard-pressed to find someone who speaks highly of the collectivist state as all-powerful, group identity as paramount crowd. You're hard-pressed to find people who speak highly of that. In fact, not only do they not speak highly of it, they're not just neutral, they're very adamantly opposed to it. We're talking about evidence-ignoring argumentation. But the reason I bring up Venezuela in particular is because, as I said, the celebrity elites and even some of the political elites who are on the quote-unquote liberal side they spent the early part of the 2000s pointing to Venezuela as being the model citizen for what they called a democratic socialism. And I think it's important to note that they put the term democratic socialism on it to make it maybe take the rough edges off it in America. Ooh, it's democratic. America's a democracy. We're not that far removed. Actually, America's a constitutional republic, which is way different than a democracy, which essentially results in mob rule. So go read about that for a little bit. So I've said in the previous episodes, the hinge for all of this, the filter that all these things must fall through, quoting again Thomas Sowell, is you must view policy not through the stated outcomes or the goals desired, but through the incentives created. And the incentives created are going to dictate what the outcomes actually will become. And that's a huge distinction to make. It's a huge, you must recognize that. You can't just have some person in power say, these are the goals desired, these are the outcomes desired, and then make decisions from that. You have to look at it from, you have to ask yourself and identify what are the incentives created. So when you begin to look at the incentives that have been created under any political system, they will actually play out and show you what the outcomes will be. Now, in America, by and large, in free market generally speaking, America is still free market. Could it be freer market in some areas? Absolutely. But generally speaking, we have embraced the ideal that effort and hard work result in a better future. And it's no mistake, it's no surprise that America has driven the world's economy for the last 150 years. And it's directly relatable to the incentives that the system created: life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, wealth, profit, accumulation of goods, buying a house, better lifestyle, a refrigerator, a dishwasher, a freezer, a big 70-inch flat screen TV, an SUV that's way too big for the road and should only be used in the off-roads of Afghanistan, but who cares? I'm going to drive one anyway because, God bless it, I'm an American. This is what it creates. The incentives are very much determining what the outcome looks like. So we get to where Venezuela is now. And I found this article, which is like, this has to be a tabloid. This has to be like, I'm sure some leftists would say, oh, this is some government, fueled disparaging of democratic socialism. Here's the headline: Venezuela's starving people are now eating the zoo animals. That's not the Onion. That's not hyperbole. That's not some crazy right-wing knucklehead website. That's a headline on Forbes.com. Venezuela's starving people are now eating the zoo animals. I mean, are you joking me? Reports in from Venezuela that starving people in that country, the beneficiaries of those glories of Bolivarian socialism, are now breaking into the zoos and butchering the animals in order to be able to eat them. Like, I don't know what else to say. That's an incredibly sad, incredibly sad statement. It's easy to throw it, I don't know how far Venezuela is. What, it's probably what is it, an 8-hour flight from Miami? Miami to Caracas, flight time. Oh, I saw three flights per day and I said 3 days, 3 hours and 30 minutes. Man, my South America always tricks me in its geography. It really takes a hard east swing. Like, in my head, I think it just goes straight down: Canada, United States, Mexico, and then it's just South America is like, it's all in one line. It really takes a swing. Really takes a swing out there into the Atlantic. Only three and a half hours. Okay, well, why was I Googling the flight distance? Oh, so it's easy when you think, oh, that's somewhere else. That's way far away. It's a third world country. It's only 3.5 hours away from Miami. So I'm actually kind of changing my original setup in your mind. I was saying, oh, it's so far away, it's hard to picture. It's actually a lot closer than I thought. But try to think of that in terms of living in America. Picture the zoo. Here in Tampa, we have the Lowry Park Zoo. Imagine an economic situation so dire that the population was breaking into the zoo to kill animals to eat them. Like, that's like out of the Fear of the Walking Dead, or some zombie movie, or some post-apocalyptic, nightmare movie. That's horrible. But that is reflecting, that's reflective of the incentives that were created under the democratic socialism of Venezuela, which apparently did not provide enough incentive for anybody to even supply a basic food supply to the people, which, when you go back and you again look at the Eastern Bloc communism countries, Soviet Russia, all these other places I've already mentioned, that's one of the things that's very prevalent, is not enough food. In Romania, people used to stand in line every morning at a in hopes of getting milk at the grocery at the local corner store. And the supply was so limited because the incentives to produce it were so jacked up and removed. And the signals that the centrally controlled pricing mechanism of the all-knowing, all-powerful government were sending such jacked up signals that no one could make proper decisions based upon them. It was essentially a crapshoot if you got milk. I mean, just terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And yet, with that article, and here's the thing, you go, oh, well, maybe Jim Carrey didn't know about that. Maybe Jim Carrey didn't have time before he went on Bill Maher to say that we should look at socialism. Well, he was on Bill Maher a couple days ago, and that article in Forbes was from August of 2017. So there's been a year that has passed of reports, verified reports, that people are eating zoo animals in order to stay alive. Next thing, next item up for bid in our socialism showcase showdown. Inflation, the next predictable outcome of the incentives that are created under a socialistic system. Inflation. The last time that we saw inflation that is approaching the levels in Venezuela was Zimbabwe. And probably 15 years ago, early 2000s, Zimbabwe was going through another commanded and controlled dictatorship. And again, one of the most predictable outcomes of the incentives created under that system is massive inflation. It was so bad at one point that the newspaper, if you Google it, if you Google Zimbabwe newspaper printed on currency, there was actually a company that it was cheaper to print their newspaper on Zimbabwean currency than it was to print it on newspaper. That's how devalued their currency had become. That's how worthless it had become. And this actually ties right back into price floors. You know, remember I was talking about a price floor? You see the folly of a price floor when inflation goes through the roof. And it sounds counterintuitive because you go, wait, inflation's going up. What would a price floor have to do with this? Well, when no one wanted Zimbabwean currency, it was completely worthless. And yet the government says, no, this is, I don't even know what their currency was, but this is the equivalent of 5 Zimbabwean whatever. And people go, no, it's not. It's garbage. Just throw it in the street. In fact, in leading up to World War II, and even during World War II, I think it was leading up to World War II, 1938. If you Google 1938 fiat currency inflation crises, you'll see pictures of citizens shoveling stacks and stacks of paper currency into their ovens because it was cheaper to heat their home with the paper currency than it was with actual wood. You know, so a picture, you know, in music videos now, you know, we've got Floyd Mayweather and whoever, Lil Wayne, you know, peeling off bills and having stacks, and they brag about it, and they pop open a briefcase and there's stacks of money. When you live in these command and control dictatorships that are driven by a faulty socialist communist ethic, you create incentives that result in Lil Wayne dumping those stacks of bills into a stove because they're so worthless. And the Forbes article pointed out back in 2017 that Venezuela was on track to experience somewhere in the range of a 13,000% inflation. So if we do the math, let's say that a gallon of milk cost $3, and we will see what a $3, if gallon milk was $3 and we wanted to see what a 100% inflation would be, okay, that would be $6. So we're going to do the same thing and we're going to multiply by, I don't know what I'm, I, it, it's so, the numbers are so high, and I'm not even sure how many zeros I'm supposed to put on it. Percentage increase calculator. Thank goodness for Google. It helps me not have to think. That's too complicated. I'm having to think too much. Currency inflation calculator. Yeah, you know, these things are dumb. Stop. 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 I'm actually going to pause this because I want to figure this out. I'll be right back. Okay, so I'm back. I figured it out. So if a gallon of milk was $3, a 13,000% increase would make that gallon of milk be $393. So imagine going down to Walmart and you're going, hey, you know, need some milk for the kids. And you're expecting to spend $3 on a gallon of milk. And you get to the aisle of the refrigerated section and you see new low price, $393. You would flip out and you'd drive to the zoo. You'd climb the fence. You'd slaughter a mongoose. You'd skin, dry it, and quarter it, take it home, throw it on the barbecue. So it's not surprising by any means that this is happening. Now, that was in 2017, a year ago, when they were predicting that inflation in Venezuela in 2018 would reach 13,000%. Well, the latest estimates are that inflation will reach 1 million percent by the end of the year. The latest calculation from a month ago was that it was 32,714%, and that had jumped in a single month. It had gone up to that. So if we run that calculation of 37,000%, your gallon of milk is now $1,113. So again, you're driving to the wildlife preserve, you're climbing over the fence, you are wrestling a flamingo to the ground because that's probably all that's left at this point. You're snapping its poor little pink neck. You're feathering it there in the zoo, and you're probably eating it raw before the other horde of 10,000 angry, starving citizens kill you in order to eat the penguin. Chicken wings, yum. But now the current estimate by the authorities is that by the end of this year, it'll reach 1 million percent. That turns a gallon of milk into $30,003. So, evidence ignoring argumentation. Evidence-free argumentation is dangerous because it's just you throwing out crap and hoping that it sticks to people's emotions so that you can manipulate them into making them do what you want. Evidence ignoring argumentation is a whole nother level diabolical. It's next level diabolical. Because you are presented with the obvious objective evil and you deliberately ignore it. It's next level psychotic. It makes absolutely zero rational sense. And the only thing that I can think of is maybe Jim Carrey and Bill Maher don't care, because after all, Jim Carrey's net worth is at 150 million, and Bill Maher's net worth is 100 million. Bill Maher made $10 million in salary last year for bumping his liberal gums on HBO. So maybe a 30,000, you know, if you have 150 million in the bank, yeah, okay, you could get a gallon of milk. How many gallons of milk could you get for $150 million? I love math. I just like making calculations. 150 million divided by 30,000. He could get 5,000 gallons of milk. So I mean, so Jim Carrey could commandeer a Walmart truck leaving Bentonville, Arkansas at gunpoint and say, "Those are my 5,000 gallons of milk. Curse you, Walmart." So yeah, the evidence ignoring is just next level evil. It's next level diabolical. It's next level psychotic. And I haven't been able to come up with a way to actually wrap my mind around it. But what's funny to me is, so you had 10 or 15 years of Hollywood's liberal elites and Washington's liberal elites attempting to point to the shining beacon of Venezuela and their democratic socialism as an example for for America to embrace. But if you go listen to the Jim Carrey interview, which we will just for poos and giggles, oh man, Google won't even let me fill in socialism. It is not even auto-filling socialism. He says, stop apologizing and say yes to socialism. I can't click on that one because it's for the Washington Post. I don't support the Washington Post. Mayer and Kerry, where am I going to find this? Maybe if I just go to YouTube, maybe I can listen to it on Bill Mayer's channel, but then I'll be giving him a monetary contribution, which I don't want to do either. You have to be very click conscious when you realize that there's so much money tied into all of these eyeballs on content. You have to be very click conscious. All right, I'll give this guy some money. He's actually a former Romanian. He's a Romanian who grew up in former communist Romania. And he is a huge critic of, or where's this? He actually quotes him somewhere. He quotes him. He's a huge critic of communism because he grew up under it. I need to spend a little bit more time in pre-production meetings with my gigantic staff. Where's the clip? I thought he had a clip in here. I guess not. Huh. Maybe no clip unless I'm just going too fast. Point. This is the point. So they've been pointing to Venezuela as the prime example of socialism. Kerry gets on Bill Mayer's program and he says, oh, look, Trump and all the conservatives are saying we don't want socialism because, oh, they keep pointing to Venezuela and saying that's what's going to happen. No, it's not. So they've completely pivoted in the blink of an eye from holding up socialism as being the shining example in Venezuela to instantly pivoting and saying, oh, the conservatives are wrong. They're saying that democratic socialism will result in Venezuela. So that evidence backfired on him big time. Clapback, you want to talk about some clapback? Eating flamingos in zoos and murdering mongoose in order to feed your family and wrestle with mountain lions in order to maybe carve off some skin and maybe a little bit of cartilage around their ribs. I'm not kidding. Go look at these pictures. It's sickening how skinny and malnourished these animals are. So they pivot away from that instantly when the evidence is, oh crap, the incentives created under democratic socialism, yikes, they resulted in some pretty bad things here. So they flip the script and they try to hijack the narrative and say, oh yeah, look it, Donald Trump and the conservatives are completely wrong because they're saying, oh, if we embrace socialism, it's going to turn out like Venezuela. Pfft, it's not going to do that. It's going to end up like Canada. So they've switched from embracing Venezuela to deriding Venezuela, and now they're on the Canadian bandwagon, which is probably content for another episode examining all of their claims about Canada. But there's not time for that because it's not this. This is all about Venezuela and evidence ignoring argumentation. So we need to avoid this. We need to avoid evidence ignoring argumentation, and we need to call it out when we see it. I mean, come on, let's have a little bit, let's have just a smidgen of chutzpah, if you will. just a smidgen, just a little, just a tablespoon of chutzpah to call people out for their evidence-ignoring crap. And you don't have to be a jerk about it. But when somebody says, oh, praise Mao, praise Chavez, praise the democratic socialism system, pull out your iPhone, Google Venezuelan zoo animals, show them the Forbes headline and others, LA Times, tons of others, with the corresponding photographs and say, hey, do you want to join me this weekend at Lowry Park Zoo so we can murder some zoo animals and hopefully feed our families for a couple days? I'm guessing you don't want to do that. So have a little bit of chutzpah to push back on these horrible, horrible ideas. The next clip that I want you to hear, and I'm hopeful that I can find it, Bernie Sanders, what's wrong with that? Please, please, please be the video. Oh, man. Food line, what's wrong with that? Yes, here we go. 13 seconds of Bernie Sanders glory. All right, here we go. Actually, I have to watch this on my iPad because if I unplug the microphone, no sound's going to come out because my microphone, I need to get a splitter cord. So we're going to go here to YouTube, which is another reason to join Muthonomics, become an annual subscriber so that I can afford things like splitter cords, so that I can simultaneously capture audio with my voice while capturing audio from the computer screen. Bernie Sanders food lines are good. So when I think of a food line, I don't think of a positive thing. He looks like a psychopath. Food lines aren't good. Like, you see pictures, black and white grainy photos of the Great Depression and grown men standing in soup lines waiting for their half a cup of stew, which probably included New York sewer rat in order to subsist out enough calories to continue breathing and having their central nervous system and corresponding faculties continue to work for another 24 hours, hopefully. And here we have Bernie Sanders.
You know, it's funny, sometimes American journalists talk about how bad a country is because people are lining up for food. That's a good thing. In other countries, people don't line up for food. The rich get the food and the poor starve to death.
You hear? I don't want to go all hyperbole and say that liberalism is a mental disorder, but he just said that, you know, sometimes you hear American journalists say, oh, in these other countries, you have people lining up for food. Well, that's a good thing. I have to always just go back to Aristotle, who, you know, in the Art of Rhetoric lays out all the rationale behind argumentation, persuasion, how to argue, how to make a point, how to persuade people. And he sort of just gives a catch-all at the end, and he says, you know what? Even madmen have opinions. And I've been using that as sort of the throw my hands up in the air and wave them like I just don't care approach to some of these people, because that makes absolutely no rational sense. Praising bread lines and food rationing. Well, you hear people say it's a bad thing, these food lines. It's a good thing. Because in rich countries, only the rich people get food and the poor people starve. Attention, Bernie Sanders. America's the richest country in the world and we don't have food lines. A-hole. Stop. So anyway, this is episode, I can't keep my episode straight because sometimes I get on a roll with recording them, and this is probably a dirty little podcasting secret that I shouldn't disclose to the unsuspecting public. But sometimes you record two or three in a row, and then you kind of get jacked up in your head because you're like, wait a second, the last one that I published was episode 14, but I've already recorded episode 15, but in your mind, you remember publishing 14, so then you get things. So I don't know what I said at the beginning of this thing. I believe this is episode 17. Maybe I should just stop numbering the episodes verbally, and then I wouldn't run into such hijinks and tomfoolery. All right, there you go. So, bad idea, Gene. Number two, evidence-ignoring argumentation, specifically as it relates to socialism. Even more specifically as it relates to the outcomes that are playing out in Venezuela as a result of the incentives that were created under such a system. And then the liberal elites quickly pivoting to making Venezuela a not the example of socialism and now pivoting to Canada. So hopefully Canada, as a result, is not murdering their zoo animals within the next 15 years. But before you jump on the bandwagon and vote for Bernie Sanders, just ask yourself if you want to be buying a gallon of milk for $30,003. Have a great day.